Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A total of 15 people have been killed, including a 10-year-old girl, following that mass shooting at Bondi Beach in Australia. Two men, a father and son, opened fire at a gathering of people who were at the beach to celebrate the Jewish festival of Hanukkah. Following this attack, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has condemned the Bondi shooting as an act of evil.
This afternoon, there has been a devastating terrorist incident at Bondi at the Hanukkah by the Sea celebration. This is a targeted attack on Jewish Australians on the first day of Hanukkah, which should be a day of joy, a celebration of faith. An act of evil anti-Semitism, terrorism, that has struck the heart of our nation. An attack on Jewish Australians is an attack on every Australian, and every Australian tonight will be, like me, devastated on this attack on our way of life. There is no place for this hate, violence and terrorism in our nation.
One witness, a lifeguard on Bondi, spoke to Sky News Australia about what he saw when the shots went off.
I was on my break from lifeguarding and all the boys were surfing out on the north side. And at first we thought it was fireworks and then we realised everyone was screaming. We looked up and then we see people dropping to the floor. I saw a little kid drop to the floor and it was really emotional. We were hiding under our boards and then we went to go paddle out. After we finished paddling out, we ran all the way up to the North Shore parking. Everyone was screaming. We didn't know what was going on. We saw a couple of dead bodies when we were walking back down. And all the high-intensity moment, everything was just so stressful, especially seeing a dead body for the first time. All my mates were just sad. We didn't know what to do.
Now, to get the latest on all of this, I'm joined on the line by Isabel Rowe, reporter with ABC News, who is in Sydney. Isabel, good morning or good evening to you.
Good evening and good morning.
Now, you've been spending time at Bondi since this outrage happened. What is the scene there now? I mean, is Bondi still off limits for everybody or what's going on?
Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.
It is still a crime scene in a lot of the areas, but very close to where this tragedy unfolded yesterday, people have started to gather for a vigil. So Bondi is an area where there is already a lot of Jewish Australians who live there, but it's also an area where people come from all around the world to come to, we know, one of Australia's most, if not the most famous beach. And it's, of course, home to a lot of locals. So people have come down 24 hours on from what happened last night here to pay their respects, to leave flowers, to leave candles. My colleagues who were there not long ago said people were breaking out into song, into hymn, singing the Australian National Anthem, coming together to try and make sense of what happened. But there is a lot of the area that is still off limits. You know, people, as you heard from that lifeguard, ran for their lives 24 hours ago. They were leaving their things on the beach. People's cars were still parked in the car park. So it sort of just got left how it was, and people have been able to hopefully start coming back and getting some of their belongings this evening.
How quickly did the whole thing unfold? I mean, what was the timeline from at the beginning of the shooting to the moment when the two gunmen were apprehended by the police?
It was a relatively short time, although for those people there, they said it felt like a lifetime. The shooting started at about 6:40 p.m., so just over 24 hours ago now in Sydney. It was Sunday night. It was a very warm night. The sun's still up, obviously, because it's summer. People heard the sound of gunshots, but presumed it was something much more innocent, for example, fireworks. But those close enough could see that these two men had appeared on a walkway, which goes over the top of a car park and has a higher vantage point where you can see the park and then the promenade and Bondi Beach. So those two men, the father and son, appeared on that bridge and they just started shooting at this group of Jewish people who were celebrating the first night of Hanukkah. For minutes, potentially almost up to 10 minutes, shots rang out in the area. There were dozens and dozens of shots. Everyone we've spoken to said it felt like about 10 minutes of shots being fired. People were killed immediately. Some people were injured. People ran for their lives. And it didn't take too long after that for police to arrive on scene. We've also seen some extraordinary footage of one civilian coming up from behind one of the gunmen, grabbing him from behind, taking his huge gun from him and turning it on the gunman. He didn't shoot. He then realized quite quickly, this civilian, that the police were coming. So he put the gun down and he put his hands up. But by this point, he had disarmed one of those gunmen, and it was an act of heroism, according to anyone who's seen the footage. But, you know, Australian leaders have praised this man as essentially having saved many more lives.
As indeed even Netanyahu has praised him and mentioned the fact that he was a Muslim who did this. And you can imagine if there hadn't been that video footage available of that man who is a Muslim and to be seen by police brandishing a weapon, it could have ended much differently. But in any event, the gun was out of commission as far as the second shooter was concerned, so therefore lives were undoubtedly saved by that man's heroic actions.
That's right. And my colleague at the ABC spoke to the man's parents today. We tracked them down outside the hospital. So this man, his name is Ahmed Al Ahmed. He was his father of two children. He was in the vicinity meeting a friend for coffee and saw what was happening and ran over. He was shot in that confrontation and he's in hospital waiting for surgery. It does seem like he will be okay, but there is still, you know, serious concerns for him. His parents just happen to be in Australia at the moment from Syria. They don't speak English, but my Arabic-speaking colleague has interviewed them. They say they agree that their son is a hero, that he's the sort of person that runs in and helps when he sees that something is wrong, and that is certainly what he did.
He's in hospital and so are many others. So it's something of an A&E crisis, I presume, in the hospitals around Sydney.
It certainly was last night. As you said, 15 people were killed and that number initially was 12. So people were taken to hospital and later died. So the number at the moment as it stands is 15, 16 if you include one of the gunmen who was also killed by police at the scene. And, of course, there were 42 others injured. The number of people considering, so still in hospital, has gone down. People have been able to leave if they were not too badly injured. But there was an extraordinary effort. We know policemen were driving ambulances so that more ambulance officers could get to attend to the people in the back. We know that surf lifesavers, of which there are many at Bondi, were running in to help as well. And I saw surf lifesavers at the end of the night hosing blood off their very famous, yellow paddle out boards that they use, on shows like Bondi Rescue, which so many people know. So just extraordinary scenes of bravery from lots of people who were there.
Now, what is known about the two shooters, father and son, when they arrived in Australia, what their background was, how much surveillance there may have been on them by the security services?
The father and son are Australian citizens. The father's name is Sajid Akram. He was 50. He was the man who was shot and killed at the scene. The son, Naveed Akram, is 24, and he's being treated in hospital under police guard. He's in a critical but stable condition, we understand. We do understand that ASIO, Australia's security agency, did know of the younger man, the son, Naveed, not because of what he had done, but because of the people he had associated with. He was investigated, or at least on a watch list of ASIO, 6 years ago. So he was known to them. The concern for many Australians today and the questions that have been asked is why this man's father was able to legally hold a license to have six guns in Australia. Australia has particularly tight gun laws, and the concern is that someone, whose son was known to ASIO, was allowed to have guns. Now, potentially this is not a situation anyone has ever faced in this country before, but these are the questions that are now being asked. And already the Prime Minister has held a national cabinet, which in Australia is a meeting of all of the state premiers and territory leaders. They all have gotten together and agreed that there needs to be some change to gun laws to prevent this sort of thing from happening.
You know, we've all been reading about how the gun laws were really tightened after the 1996 Port Arthur massacre, 35 people killed by a lone gunman whose name was Martin Bryant. So one would have thought that the gun laws are already extremely tight. And the questions then that you raise, how does one man get access to six weapons, particularly weapons of this caliber that can do that kind of damage?
Well, that's right. And I think many Australians would be surprised to know that that is something that is legal in this country. But if you have a license, you have a certain type of license, and you use them for the purposes that this man was using them for, which is, for shooting and hunting as part of a gun club we understand he was part of, then that is legal in this country. And so, perhaps people might wonder whether it should be legal, and that's certainly the questions that have been asked today. What the Prime Minister has said is that he would like the country to consider banning any non-citizens from having weapons licenses, although these two men were citizens, but also that people should be restricted as to the number of weapons that they can have. Perhaps six is too many. It's those sorts of details that need to be worked out now.
And do we know when they came to Australia? I mean, to get citizenship, Irish people who go to Australia all the time know how tight the whole visa restrictions are in order to work or stay in Australia. You have to be sponsored, and there are all sorts of visa and necessities before you can remain, never mind become a citizen of your country. So is anything known about when they came and how they qualified for citizenship?
Not at this stage, although we do know that the father who had the gun license legally has had it since 2015. So that's 10 years. So he's obviously been a citizen for at least 10 years. He may have been a citizen for much longer than that. I don't know. And I don't think that information has been disclosed yet. But these are, the sorts of issues and questions that people will have in the coming days.
Mm. Now, the question of the event itself, so many Jewish people assembling together in a very public way on Bondi Beach. Is that an annual thing? Would that have been predictable? I know it was advertised, but would it have been predictable to allow ne'er-do-wells to start planning for something like this way in advance?
It certainly would be something that would happen every year, as I understand it, whether it's this exact event or something very similar. There is often festivals or gatherings for the beginning of Hanukkah. Hanukkah is obviously a very common and well-known Jewish celebration. And in Sydney's eastern suburbs, which is where Bondi is, this is where one of the highest, if not the highest, Jewish population in Australia lives. There are lots of Jewish people in this area, whether they be Orthodox Jewish or just, as people would describe them, cultural Jewish Australians. So, you know, the fact that people would gather together and celebrate Hanukkah in the way that others would gather and celebrate Christmas is nothing unusual. It would be fairly common to see in this part of the world. And so, yes, I suppose you would have a pretty, you know, heads up of this sort of event happening. And I suspect police will be looking at, when they look at the motives, you know, the fact that this was chosen for the first day of Hanukkah, at such a public event in an area that is known to be a Jewish area. These are the sorts of things they'll look at when they're determining a motive.
Isabel Rowe, reporter with ABC News in Sydney, thank you very much for joining us on the program, and we'll have more reportage and analysis later on in the program.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.